Well, hello, everybody, and thank you for joining me today on the Born to Talk radio show podcast. And, you know, every show brings its own personality to the show, and sometimes I know my guests not at all, and other times I know my guests very well. And today is that exception, because my guest today is John Sharp, and he and I have been friends for nearly 30 years, and it'll be easy to see why, because he is truly a community activist. So welcome to the show, John.
Thanks, Marcia. I'm happy to be here.
I'm delighted to have you join us, and I thought we could start by having you tell us and our listeners a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up, and just tell us a little about yourself.
Well, I love talking about myself, so this is perfect. Actually, I grew up in a small town in northern New Mexico called Farmington, New Mexico. It's near the Four Corners. If you've ever traveled out to northern Arizona, southern Utah, southern Colorado, northern New Mexico, that's the spot. There's an amazing natural landscape there. And my father moved there with my mom when they were recently married and started a career as a physician. He was one of the only two doctors in town when he first came. And so I grew up in this small town of probably 20,000 on a good day. It's an energy place, so there was lots of work for my dad to do, because they used to recruit the roughnecks to go work on the oil rigs. They'd go and find the most sober person in the morning that they could find at the coffee shop, and they would go out on the rigs. So he had lots to do. And so I was one of four children. I was the last of four. In 4 years, my parents got down to business once they got together. And I'm the youngest of those four. I have an older sister and two older brothers. And I was born on my third brother. He and I have the same birthday, even though we're 3 years apart. So,
wow,
it was a fun thing to grow up that way, because we ended up looking like each other at one point. So people thought we were twins, because I grew faster than he did. And in high school, by that time, I was his height. And it made us close. And the other brother, the in-between brother, always used to wonder when he was little why he didn't get a birthday party when we got birthdays. So my parents just moved his birthday to our birthday.
Oh, that's funny.
So we had all three boys. They were very practical. Anyway, so yeah, I grew up in small town, and then for education, ended up having an opportunity. Well, my parents sent us to military school in Roswell, New Mexico, all three boys. Spent 3 years of high school at New Mexico Military Institute in Roswell. And that experience was phenomenal. It shaped me in a number of major ways. But one of the things it also did is give me a friend who went to Texas A&M ahead of me, graduated ahead of me. So he was one friend that was writing me and saying how great Texas A&M was, which is, as it turned out, where I ended up going to school for my college career. And that was after a year spent on the road with a group called Up With People. That's an international group of students that travels around the world building bridges of communication through lots of philanthropic work at hospitals and schools. And we did, but through a musical show primarily. It was all music driven messages, was, let's get along and help each other. And we stayed in host families everywhere. So it was an amazing experience. That's one of the other things that really shaped me in terms of my worldview. So, but when I got off that tour, and I toured all over Europe and Eastern United States for 12 months and got home, and I was expecting to spend the summer there and maybe not go to school right away, because I thought I just needed some time. But after about a week at home and the culture shock that I went through coming off the road and being so international to my small town, I quickly realized that wasn't a good plan. And fortunately, Texas A&M, among the schools that I had applied and been accepted to, A&M was the only one that wrote me to say, hey, when you get off the road, come down. So it was a last minute thing. I called the school up and they said, you got a spot still for you. So I looked up another friend of mine that was also in high school with me that was there as well, and had a place to stay with him. And that's the rest is history. Spent 5 years at A&M, and I studied marketing, and at one point took a year off to our semester off with one of my roommates at the time, my best friend at the time, and we traveled around the country in a car camping for the most part, and seeing a lot of my Up With People contacts that I'd stayed with during my tour. But we circumvented the country, and that was another really incredible experience in terms of shaping my worldview.
You know, it's funny, I think about when you talk about Texas A&M, because as we're going to be just sharing with people how you and I met each other, I remember knowing that you went to Texas A&M because my son had just finished going to Texas A&M for grad school. And I remember that the two of you had that in common. But I wanted to talk about why you became so interested in community service.
Well, I grew up in a household. My mother was incredibly active in the community, and set a great example. A few things that she did: she was on the school board for a number of years, ran the school board. She was a Girl Scout leader. All of us kids, no matter where we are, we're in the pecking order. My sister was first, and Mom was a Girl Scout leader, so we all went through the Girl Scout program together. Mm-hmm. Didn't go to the Boy Scouts, but I definitely was Girl Scout. My mother was one of these kind of people that saw a problem and tried to figure out a solution, and so that was really good experience for all of us. All of us kids are all very active in our communities, and the one thing that you know, I learned from her was that if you are involved, you have a chance at helping make the world a better place, but you also have more and more connections. It's more and more, you're more grounded to wherever you are at the time. You're enlisting your time to help people. And that's really joyful for me to have the number of people that I know through the things I'm doing in the community that I can call on. If somebody needs something, there's a good chance I know somebody that can help them. And it's not a power thing. It's more of a feeling of connectiveness,
yes.
However you say that.
Yes.
You know, you go to Vons, the little Vons in our community, and it's rare that I'm there that I don't see somebody I know, including
Absolutely.
You. You and I see each other all the time. But that it's one thing I think human beings crave, and in this world, you know, of everybody's looking at their devices most of the time, it's really nice to have a human connection, and that's really something that I love about what I've done.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was also a Girl Scout leader when you said that. I forgot that. You are really involved in what I'm going to call our community. So I'm just going to, for people that don't know, Westchester is not in New York. It's a community within the city of Los Angeles where we both live. And I remember when we met, because we met at the Westchester YMCA where I was working. And that's how I knew you were with Up With People. That's why I knew something about your background. That was in 1995.
Are we that old, Marcia?
I'm older than you.
That's a long time ago.
It was a day or two ago. It certainly was. My kids were off to college. I got a job. You know, my friend Carol said, if you want to keep stopping at Nordstrom's, you might want to get a job. So anyway, I ultimately became the membership and the healthy lifestyle director there. But so I worked there for 10 years. I loved my job at the Westchester Y. But you are also very active at the YMCA, besides being a member back in those days. Why don't you tell our listeners about the current responsibilities you have at our local Westchester YMCA?
Okay. Well, currently I'm the board chair of the board of managers. I've been on the board since 2020 during COVID. I was reconnected with the Y. I've been a member for since those days, so closing on 40 years. And I've always felt that philanthropically, the YMC system in general is the best dollar for dollar way I can help people. And because they've got programming and services for little to the ancients and everything in between. And they have this particular Y has a huge reach in terms of our service area. My kids grew up through the Y, as you mentioned, and I had so many incredible experiences with them through what was the Indian Guides program back then, the day. It's now the Adventure Guides, and met so many people that are still my friends now. that at the time I was asked to be on the board because I was a volunteer leader then, but I also had just started my business and things were really, really busy in that regard, and I couldn't make the commitment, but I always knew that I was going to circle back. And when the time was right, I was going to get back involved. And then so during COVID, this particular Y, as well as I think the other centers in the LA Association Y's, pivoted because we had to close our facilities to our membership. And instead of closing and just shutting down and hunkering down, we actually pivoted and created a shower program for the unhoused in our community. And that ultimately grew up. We were serving 200 people a week. We're coming there for showers. And then I started a community pantry there to help service the food needs of both those folks and surprisingly a lot more people in the community that were suffering. And the Y reached out to the seniors they knew, they were members. They had a group of volunteers that they organized and partnered with other places to other organizations to reach the seniors that were shut in and make sure they had what they needed. We started a remote learning thing with the Inglewood School District to provide a safe place for kids that didn't have internet connection at home or a parent there to supervise them during the day, so the kids could come to the Y and have preschool attention from staff, and then a safe place to learn, and then after school activities. So all those things were happening, and I was incredibly inspired by them and really wanted to be a part in reshaping the Y and what we were going to be coming out of the COVID. And I learned then that the Y is actually a service organization. I always kind of considered it a gym like everyone else typically does, unless they've been involved in something like the COVID response. So anyway, that's a long, long story to a short question. So,
but you know what, John, that's the focus of having this conversation with you, because there are YMCAs around the world, and I continue to still be a member of the YMCA. And there was times where, you know, you just couldn't be outside walking, or you just felt like you wanted to be in community, whatever that is. There was the writing group that I think is still going on.
Still is, yeah.
It still is going on. And the Y just serves a focus. And for people that want to support this kind of an organization where maybe somebody really can't afford a membership, but they can get a scholarship. You know, I became very, very involved with that YMCA, and it's in my neighborhood. And it the things that you just mentioned, all of those things, remember we did all kinds of interesting things. We built a rock wall. Remember that? On
yep.
the side of the building?
Yep. I mean, part of, you know, the challenge is, the Y system in general isn't rolling in money. So if we want to do something specific like the rock wall, we've got to go out as the board or staff members and find a sponsor Correct. Who is willing to contribute to that and pay for it. Because, you know, and the majority of the money that we raise goes into the financial assistance, because we don't turn anyone away from the programming or memberships if they qualify. And that's why a lot of folks who are paying the membership. And, you know, thankfully during COVID, we had a good number of people that realized the good that we were doing and continued their memberships, even when they couldn't go to the Y. And we're really thankful for them. We're still challenged by building our membership back to pre-COVID numbers. We're about, I think, in the low 70% area. And membership is the driver of our ability to continue to do the financial right. assistance that we try. So, anyway, I mean, another great example with an amazing pivot and amazing community service that came from our branch and otherwise as well. They're not calling them branches anyway. We're calling them centers, actually, a center for community well-being. We want to be the hub of the community in terms of well-being, and that means mental, physical, everything. So after the fires, literally the day after the fires, we opened up a donations, our Y Annex building for donations, and quickly realized that the places that we were going to be donating to were beyond capacity. So we pivoted again and became a distribution center literally in 2 days. And by the day 4 or 5, we had it nailed. If you were out there and you did volunteer, I think you would You would definitely say that we
John,
had a
this
great
has
operation.
happens once in a while where my guest drops off, and I'm hopefully, I don't know what causes that to happen, and hopefully you're going to be able to pick this back up.
Do you know where I dropped off?
Yeah,
are you?
You're back now. I don't know what happens in this technology, which always makes my heart stop. Let's get back to the why effort in just a moment, because I wanted to ask you one other question about the why, and then I do want to talk about the fires. Just one other question just related to your family. Were your kids also in youth and government at the Y?
My daughter participated in youth and government, and my son unfortunately didn't. I think it's one of the most impactful, transformational things we do.
Yes.
And it's actually part of an effort we're trying to do right now. The board, there's an outreach committee, because we have, our service area is not just Westchester. We go as far west, northwest as we have Venice, we have Playa Vista, we have El Segundo, Hawthorne, Lenox, Inglewood. So there's, we have a huge service area, and a lot of the people that are in our service area don't participate in the programming or the services that we provide, because they either the proximity issues or the cost issues or both. So our outreach committee is committed to taking the non-site specific programming like youth and government to the communities. We're starting with youth and government because it's one of the most powerful programs we have, and we have a very strong delegation of high school kids that are participating now from Westchester. And we just got back from Sacramento. If folks don't know what the youth and government is, they basically learn how the legislation process works. They learn about the structure of the state government. They learn about the appellate, the court system. And then the culmination of the semester of participation is they take over the Capitol in Sacramento. Yeah. And these are kids that we went up to Sacramento. I was up there for my first time to witness it in person. It is unbelievable. They're dressed in coats and ties and business attire. They break up into the areas of interest from everywhere from budgeting. I saw kids debating about, they actually formed a state constitution as if they were going to create a state themselves, independent state. So they formed a constitution. There was a group debating budget, and it was great. It was way more sophisticated than I anticipated. They have a court system where they elect a Supreme Court justice, and the appellate court justices get nominated, and then they actually have mock courts where they actually try different civil sorts of topics. And then they also have a legislation session where they propose legislation, they debate it, they vote on it. And last year, one of my friend's daughters proposed legislation that's actually made its way into the real Senate or Assembly and is being presented as law. So it could become law. So it's just an incredible program. And the kids love the experience. They love the connections with other kids across the state. There was like almost 2,000 kids participating this year. And we actually, the Westchester Center, had the youth governor last year for the first time in 35 years, who has to be elected throughout the state. She's got a campaign throughout the year and get elected during the gathering in Sacramento. So it was very exciting. Anyhow.
It really is. And I know that we are talking about something that's personal to both of us because of the YMC in this location. But people are listening to this in other parts of the country. The YMCA is across the country. And I just would encourage people, if they haven't really explored the YMCA in their own community, to check it out. But I'd like to move on to something else that's really, because you are a community icon. So you're involved with something called WAM, W-A-M. And I thought, why don't you tell people what WAM stands for and what WAM is all about?
All righty. WAM actually comes from Westchester Arts and Music. It's actually WAM Block Party, Westchester Arts and Music Block Party. It started, this will be our 10th year. I was part of a community garden, the Emerson Avenue Community Garden, which is right in the middle of our little community, back in the 2015. And volunteering there, and then got on the board, and then I was the president of the board at the time, and also the head of the marketing committee. And we wanted to do something to bring people to the neighborhood to see that something was going on, because it was just a dirt patch before we got involved and the nonprofit was started to try to bring it back and make it somewhere, something, a green space that people could enjoy, both the folks that had a plot and those who didn't have a plot. So we wanted to do it as a marketing idea. And the first year it just took off. We it wasn't going to be a fundraiser originally. We were just trying to get people there, and then I was able to raise enough sponsorship money that we ended up making money on it. And then since then it's grown to, last year we estimate we had over 8,000 people. We raised, since the last 3 years, the money has gone to the Westchester Family YMCA, and I think we've contributed anywhere from 20 to 35,000 a year. So last year was the first year I didn't produce the entire thing with my volunteer help. I operate as executive producer, which means I'm kind of got my hands in everything. But we have a great group of about 12 committee members who have, you know, different buckets that they are responsible for, from food trucks to staging to sponsorships to communications. So those folks have been on the job, you know, been working with me for years, and they all know what they're doing very well. So it's almost running itself. There's still a lot of city related stuff, permitting and licensing and things like that, that we have to go through, that became a pretty big burden, because the bigger we got, the more city was paying attention to us, the more challenges we got from the city to accommodate. So I gave away the 501c3 that I'd started, and it's being run by another group of people that have been associated with the event since it started. So I am now just booking all the bands, because music is one of my passions. And yes, one of the things I take great pride in is the quality of the entertainment that we have at Wham. I think people show up there thinking it's going to just be a block party where you see your neighbors out there with their grills, but it's quite significant.
It is. And I know every January, you and your wife, Irene, host soup nights on Sundays. And I don't know, how long have you guys been doing this, John?
We've done that 17 years. 17 years, yeah. Irene, I forgot to say when I was talking about myself, I've been married to a wonderful woman, and that's Texas A&M Connection, for 40 years. And we have two adult children, a 33-year-old son who's engaged with his lovely fiance and living in Portland, Oregon, and my daughter, who is also attached with a life partner, got married 2 years ago this September. So we're thrilled, and my family is one of my biggest accomplishments. I should have said that earlier.
That's okay.
My wife Irene and I met in college, and one of the things I love about her is she keeps life interesting. She does. We really don't have a dull moment, because she doesn't like to have nothing on the calendar. So 17 years ago, she saw an article in some magazine about some woman back in New Hampshire that did soup nights, where she basically had an open house every week for a month. And it sounded like a great idea, and we decided to try it, and it also took off. And we have friends that it's their tradition as well now. So,
yeah,
every Sunday in January, I make a boatload of soups, usually two or three different kinds of soup, and everybody that our guests come and bring side dishes and drinks. And I love the connections that I see from folks it's an easy date for me. If I meet somebody that seems interesting and a nice person, I'm like, you should come to soup night. So I put them on my list. And when they show up, there's always somebody that they knew, that they know, that they didn't know, that knew me and Irene. So
exactly.
It's really been a blast. So
it has. I've been going for years and years. And I remember when you started, I remember you saying that, you know, the holidays are over. And now what? Now there's nothing? And it's like, no, let's get together on Sundays in January and just see each other. And and you run into somebody that maybe you haven't seen in a while. Or in many cases, I've met people there, John, that I didn't know before, that have been also very, very interesting. So I've always enjoyed your soup nights. And so not only are you a really good cook, but you mentioned how much you've been a music lover. And I know you're a drummer, correct?
Yeah, I play drums and guitar.
Right. So I'd like you to share, because I know a little bit about this and you too. Tell everybody about house music. What is house music?
Well, house music grew out of my love of attending music events, live music events. And there's a platform that still exists called So Far Sounds. And Irene and I have been to a number of those shows. And we really, really like them. They're basically the same thing I'm doing with house music. They are intimate musical events at different locales, from people's homes to little office spaces to rooftops, whatever. And you bring your own booze if you want to bring it. You bring your own chair, and you don't know who you're going to see, but you go and because you know it's going to be supporting the artists that are going to be performing. And there's three acts per show. Anyway, long story short, we love those shows, and then found out that So Far Sounds doesn't pay their talent. They only pay them $100 or so. So it's not really a great music, money making gig for the artists. And I didn't really, we were going to host So Far at our house and decided that rather than do that, we would just do our own thing. So I started that back in 2018, I believe. And I do the same thing that they do. I promote the show. I have three different working musicians. And these are people that are trying to do this for a living. And I invite them to come perform, and then I promote the show, and then I sell tickets to my guests, and all the money goes to the artists. I pay a sound tech person, and I pay for rental chairs, and then the rest of the money goes to the talent. So it's a great gig for the talent. I think the experience for my guests is always, I've never had a bad response. I try to curate a show that's pretty diverse. I try to give something for everybody. Like we've had everything from string quartet, to five piece, R&B bands. So you don't know for sure what you're going to get when you come. I actually tell people if they want to look up the musicians, they can. But it's been a blast to curate because I like curating a show. And what happened during COVID is we couldn't do the shows anymore. So I started through the Wham Block Party Instagram feed doing a weekly show every Friday because I knew the artists were not being able to perform anywhere, so they're dead in the water. We would do a show on the Wham feed, and it enabled me to invite my friends and family that aren't local to experience some of the music that I was, producing. And it also enabled me to go, once I went through my LA contacts to get referrals, I went to Nashville and I started with a whole bunch of Nashville people. And I went from there to the Eastern Seaboard, all the way up to Canada. So I know we did 60 shows through COVID. We did a show for 60 weeks. And you talk about your technology worries. When we first started, you never knew because it was so new to everybody, and they're taking over our feed. So I would give them the sign-in credentials, then would keep my fingers crossed and hope like everything worked. And we were successful. It was just great, and they made decent money. We would pin their Venmo information at the bottom of the screen, and it turned into a really wonderful weekly respite from all the COVID craziness. And we had a pretty loyal audience that was very generous, and people made anywhere from $150 in tips to $1,200 in tips for an hour show. So I feel really good about it. And now, because I know so many people, there are people that are touring and will come through town, and we're in contact because I know they're on the road, and there's sometimes I can get them to come to my house and do a show, or we'll bring them to Wham and keep the quality of the music up there.
People might be wondering, well, where the heck does he do this? Well, you have a magnificent backyard. And
It's
so you just.
it's yeah. It's intimate, I can get if I squeeze it, I can get 80 people back there. But it's I rent chairs, which is why I rent chairs. I tried it without renting chairs, and people's lawn chairs are so big it made it more challenging.
Right.
I can squeeze 80 people. It's a really nice, intimate environment. So,
I love it. I've always really enjoyed that. I would mention that you are a community activist, which is obvious as we continue to have this conversation. another activity that you participate in is Clean Up Westchester, which was started by a Westchester High alumni. I also went to Westchester High, Grant Francis, and he was actually on my podcast a while ago when we talked about Clean Up Westchester. You want to tell people what that activity is all about?
Sure. And I love Grant Francis, and I love
too.
Judy Francis, his wife. They're some of the greatest people in the community. So Grant started with I think it was his, this is all him, actually. I'm thinking of another thing he started, Team Challenge, which is he did with another person. But anyway, Clean Up Westchester is a group of volunteers. There's probably anywhere from 20 to 30 of us that show up. And he does it twice a month. I've been going to the once a month crew, and you spend basically, we'll pick a part of town, pick a part of the community that we want to clean up. And we just show up and pick up trash for an hour. And it's surprisingly cathartic. I love it. It's, you know, you go at 9 a.m, you get back at 10, 10:15. You feel like you know, when you leave, it's like, wow, look what we did. You know, you rotate through the community because they're, you know, obviously it doesn't stay clean for forever. So, I think it's an amazing thing. I'm a big believer in community-based solutions. I think that we may end up having to go this route with the way the government's being dismantled and things like that. We're going to end up having to take care of each other. And I think, you know, we can solve a lot of problems, and we can do a lot of things if we have a common cause and we pursue that cause, just like the fire relief. Like, there were people there that came from all walks of political spectrum, you know, race, age, everything. It was the most diverse crowd I think I've ever been a part of. And we all had a common cause, and we just kicked butt. So,
since you mentioned the fire relief, I don't think you could not know about the devastating fires that we had, not in our community of Westchester, but not far from the Palisades and Altadena and Malibu. What were some of the recent fire relief efforts that the YMCA did?
Well, I mentioned earlier that we started day one or day two. I think the afternoon the fires were going, it looked like it was going to be bad. They put out the word that we were going to be a donation center, and the plan was that we were going to drop everything that was donated to us. We were going to sort and then, you know, organize and then drop it at the Colin Katz Y on the west side, closer to the fire zone. And so day one, it was breathtaking how much generosity came through the community. We had trucks of stuff that, you know, Boy Scouts would organize and do their collection. So anyways, we had so much stuff. We got a bunch of volunteers to take it over to Colin Katz the next morning. And by that time, they were already overwhelmed with how much donations were coming in. So they basically sent us away to try to get it somewhere else. And we realized the second afternoon that we weren't going to be able to do that original plan. So we pivoted and created a distribution site at our Y Annex. And the, you know, the amount of volunteers, we had over 1,500 volunteers the next 9 days. We actually had a team of people that were using going outreaching, and we posted QR codes and forms on our social media for folks that were in the zone that were evacuated that needed stuff. And we made deliveries. We had a team of people that volunteered to drive, and we would have people shop for them, and we'd made over 500 deliveries during that week, one metric. And we had the line was out the door the next morning. These incredible volunteers. We had one volunteer show up who has film production background, and she was the one that basically stepped in. Her name is Maya Donato, amazing young woman. Came in, saw the plans, figured out the process, and she took charge of and had teams of people doing different things and organized everything. It was just absolutely amazing. So we had a team in the back that, you know, as a truckload of stuff would come in or a carload of stuff would come in, we'd have people unload the car, then they'd bring it, all the stuff inside to the the annex building, and then we had people there going through everything and sorting, and then we had runners to take the sorted stuff outside to the tables that were out in the parking lot. And by the, like I said, the fourth day or so, we had better and better sorting. Like, you know, we had all the kids' stuff broken up into ages and sizes, and shoes all organized by size and sex, and, you know, baby supplies and food. And then there was a lot of communication between front of house and back of house about, you know, what was needed, what was not needed. And we were trying to put the word out on social media to let people know what to bring, what we needed. And literally we would say, oh, we got too many diapers. And all of a sudden we need more diapers. So we throw the word out there for, we need size four, you know, four, five, and six. And there'd be a wave of four, five, and six diapers come in. And we put the word out, say, all right, we got enough diapers. It was just crazy how responsive it was, and super exciting. And the vibe was absolutely phenomenal. Like people pulling together, having fun, you know, feeling really good. I think that converted a lot of people who may not have been volunteering as much, because I think we've seen nationally a drop off in volunteerism, and that's been a major concern for the groups I've been involved with, including the Y. And I think, you know, you realize when you do spend that time and you leave that day and you met some people that are, we had people coming in. We had a couple come from Minnesota, flew out for the week to spend time in our pop-up store that we created after we moved the stuff from the annex. After the first 9 days, we had to get the stuff away from the annex because we had programming in the annex and we had people renting the space that needed to have access. So we were fortunate to get a retail store space in the LAX corridor, and we moved everything over there and created a store overnight where people could come who had needs, and we had people there, volunteers, to help them find the things they needed and move it on. So It was just incredible. So we had like I said, the folks from Minnesota came out for a week and spent a week in the store. We had British Airlines. There were three flight attendants that showed up one morning who'd flown in from London the night before, and they spent the day with us. They're off their free day working with us. You know, there's a girl from Texas that came out and spent her whole vacation working with us. Just amazing connections and great people. So. Yeah, it was one of the best. It was one of the best things I've ever done service-wise. It was most rewarding things. And you know, when you have the devastation of the fires, you're watching it on television and feeling just so helpless. And like we have 17 families day by day. You're finding out more and more families that we knew who lost their homes, their churches, their schools. You know, entire community wiped out. It was so depressing. And then to be able to go to the Y and spend a good 9 or 10 hours doing something about it really was therapeutic. And I'm hopeful that those people that had the experience both had their eyes open about what the Y is about, but also just as volunteering, how rewarding it can be.
You bet. So speaking of that, you and I are involved in a lot of different things together in this community. And each year we have a 4th of July parade, and there are many service clubs and schools and community members that participate as the parade moves down Loyola Boulevard into Loyola Marymount University, which is just 3 blocks from my house. What do you enjoy about participating in that parade?
Well, I've been part of the parade since its inception, actually, not as on the organizing crew, but back in the day, my street, Oglesby Avenue, we got into, there's a group of 4 or 5 families that started block parties. Block parties are actually big in this community, which I love.
Yep.
They've always been sort of a tradition. I think they're in our DNA, and we'd heard and seen some of our neighboring streets do their block parties, and we're always kind of jealous because they were well attended, whatever. We decided we would do our own, and the first year we did a theme, a luau, and one of the participating families, he had a meat business. He had a butcher shop and a meat company, and he ended up roasting an entire pig on a spit and had a custom built spit. So it was like, he raised the bar way high. Like, okay,
oh my God,
get your game on. And so Joe Toya was his name. He unfortunately passed away, but Joe and Lori were cornerstones of our block and you know, very involved in the community as well. And that set the tone. So every year we'd raise the bar. So we ultimately, there was one year we did a Mardi Gras, and I built a float for the Mardi Gras. We had our own parade on the street, and I built this big float with a Joker's head is about, you know, 3 or 4 feet in diameter. I say I, but neighbor who's no longer here, lived in the community, and I built this thing, paper mache. I'm a paper mache king. And so we let the kids all come over and put it, you know, so we ended up having this parade, a Fat Tuesday parade, and we elected a king and queen who were the oldest members of the block, had been on the block the longest. And we had so much fun, and we're like, what are we going to do with this float? Now we've built this float. We decided we put it in the parade, the 4th of July parade. So we entered our street and put our float in that parade. And that was years and years ago. And we had, you know, New Orleans, we had beads and things that we'd throw out to the crowd back when you could throw out the things to the crowd. They don't let you do that anymore. Anyway, so that's the beginning. So I've been part of that parade since then. And then through one of my years in the Indian Guides, we marched in the parade. One year, I actually was really, you know, they don't want people just to walk along and have nothing going on. So we decided that every Indian tribe should do something that relates to their tribe's history. So my tribe was the Haida, back in the day, and they were totem builders. So we built this big totem pole and put it on wheels, and that's what we wheeled through. So every tribe had their thing that they did that I encouraged everybody to do. And then another year everyone did canoes. We had cardboard canoes. And so we made a big presence, and it was great because we, at the time, during those days, we had 200 families involved in this program. So there was a lot of kids and dads and moms involved. Come full circle, the last 5 or 6 years, I've been asked to be part of the organizing committee. And so I've had various jobs, but most of it's, you know, the entertainment, trying to find school bands that'll participate. And I ran the classic cars last year. For the VIP, I had to organize the cars, and it's another example of just like how much joy being involved in and helping your friends, like Chad Mander, you know well, yep. Who is the CEO, former staff member at the YMCA. We go correct. Back to those days. Chad is now running the chamber, and and you know, everybody's involved. The folks that are involved in the committee are also involved in a lot of other things. Stephanie Davis is the publisher of the Hometown News, and her sister Christina used to run the chamber. And so it's all these connections, and we all just enjoy doing something together, you know, doing good things together. And the parade is amazing. If you've not been to the parade, it's you know, there almost 10,000 people show up for it. And
it's phenomenal. And so we have an honorary mayor. We have floats. We have marching bands. The local schools participate. It's right. Fabulous. And it's always like, during baseball season. So the Dodgers are almost always playing that day too, just as a side note.
Oh, well, can't avoid that. Okay. Yeah. I mean, there was 50 floats last year, I think. So it's fairly sizable. And we're year I'm working on the entertainment again, and I'm trying to find like the Chinese lion dancers. And I'm trying to find a really, cause this is our 25th year. So it's going to be hopefully as big as we can make it. And I'm trying to find unique acts that I can bring that can, you know, it's one thing to have an act, but then you've got to, if they're not marching, then you've got to have a way to get them down the street. And it's a little more complicated than it may seem, but it's fun.
Well, so John, why are you involved in all these activities?
You couldn't tell? I love it.
Oh, is that why? Okay, never mind.
Well, you know, I sometimes at night I'm thinking, you know, why do I do these things? There's some stress involved. Like if I, you know, my backyard shows, the house shows, they take a couple of days of work. You know, soup night, because I'm making soup we have between, you know, 30 and 70 guests for the soup nights every week. That's a lot of, it turns to be a lot of work. And there are times where I'm like, you know, you elected to do this. Well, you know, you could always pull over and give it a pass, but every time I do it, the response I get is great. And I just love the connection and connections with people. And the more my philosophy in life is you can't have too many friends. And this is a way for me to stimulate those friendships, to grow them, because I've got things that are going on that people might be interested in. And otherwise you meet somebody out in the pickleball courts, which is in my new community, and my new addiction. But, you know, you meet these people and then you see each other on pickleball and you don't see each other again. Like, we don't know each other that well. But if they come to my music nights and they see another side and we have more time together, or they come to soup night, you know, it's a way to be more connected. And I don't care about the power. It's really just about the feeling of groundedness and my feeling that you can't have too many friends, you know. And I love, if somebody needs something, they can call me and I can probably help them out or find somebody that I know that can. So
exactly.
There's so much satisfaction in that.
So what do you think draws you to all these activities? The people?
I think it's a combination of the relationships that I'm forming and the fact that I think I went to a funeral once for one of the illustrators I repped. I was in the advertising business for 35 years and I repped artists. And one of my illustrators early on had a family member die. So I was at the service and the rabbi said, "Live your life like you want to be remembered." And that really stuck with me. And then when my mom passed, there was standing room only at her service. There were people that she had affected in a positive way that you wouldn't even know that they even knew each other at this point, much less would drive, you know, across the state to be at a funeral service. And that stuck with me. And like, I want to create the biggest wake I can, as if I'm a boat traveling through my life. I want my wake to be huge. And that's really motivating to me, because I feel like, and especially with my mom's example, where she did things that she didn't even know she was having an impact on somebody in the way that she did. And I feel like my, you know, the things that I'm bringing to the community and the things that the Y does through the work that we do to raise the money to send a kid to camp that wouldn't otherwise have a chance to go to camp, there is a possibility that there are some kids or some people out there that we affect in a way we don't even know, that they go on and they pay it forward and they help other people. And I'm very motivated by that ripple effect concept. So I'd say, I guess that's probably it in a nutshell.
It's true. So let's talk a little bit more about volunteerism in general. It seems that it's been declining over the recent years. Why do you think that is? And is there anything that we can do about it besides what we're doing right now, which I think is very beneficial? Why do you think volunteering has declined?
I think COVID really affected a lot of things in a way that you might not even think about it originally when we were living it. I think people withdrew. We had to withdraw from society then to be safe. And so they formed other habits, you know, for the gym side of the Y, you know, people got their Pelotons, or maybe they joined another club when things came back around, or they got their home gym going. And we're creatures of habit. So once that settles in, which it did over the time we were dealing with COVID, then it's really hard to get people back. And I think that sort of withdrawing thing also affected people going to church and you know, people joining and being active in service clubs. And I have been involved in the Rotary Club over the last few years, as well as, you know, we were also part of the church community when our kids were young. And I know for a fact from the folks I do know that are still involved in those organizations that there's been an attrition. You know, there are people have not joined and aren't as engaged. And even sometimes, you know, I've been troubled by trying to get the YMCA board, all the board engaged. We have a great board at the YMCA, but like anything, there's folks who are very, very engaged and there's folks who aren't as engaged. And my goal when I took the chair position was to try to rally the troops to have everyone step forward and everyone be involved. And I've been less successful at that than I would have liked to say. But I think, and you know, I've heard from not only the folks I know, but I've heard in the news and you know, not anecdotally, that volunteerism has been down. And there are fewer people that are volunteering. There are fewer people that are donating the people that are donating and volunteering are doing more. And I think I blame COVID for the most part, but I also blame the social media landscape because I feel like people are addicted to their devices and it's purposeful. It goes back to advertising. Everything is, and I was in advertising, so I'm very, very versed on how they're doing it and why they're doing it. They want to keep you on your devices. They want to keep you clicking through because that means that they're getting more and more money and they're getting your data to market more to you. And I feel like that's had a deteriorating effect on so many things, but volunteerism is one of the things that's taken a hit because I think people are, you think they would be more motivated because they see maybe there's, you know, things like viral things like pouring water on yourself or whatever it is that they're trying to do. But I think that's not really volunteerism, you know? Volunteerism is finding a need that you actually can connect with in a physical way and solving a problem. It's not writing a check or pouring water on your head. You know, it's like,
right. It's
showing up and there's so much need. You decide what you're interested in, and I guarantee you there is a way you can get involved and help people.
You know, I'm thinking about this because obviously I'm a lot older than you. Do you find that the older generation, my generation, people that have been retired or they're widowed or whatever their circumstances are, have you found that the older generation is more apt to want to volunteer?
Well, I think it's twofold. I think one, they have more time than, you know, if you're younger in your career, you got kids, you're running them around. I think that's the other issue. I think people, part of it is, you know, the fact that we're getting pinged all the time. There's notifications from every platform you're associated with. And, you know, so you're getting dinged all the time. You're getting texts, you're getting, you know, notification dings. People feel busy, you know, you're busy because you're also taking care of your personal brand. You know, you're shooting stuff and putting it on Facebook and your own social feeds. So there's that part of it, but you're also, you know, the younger folks are more involved with the kids and business and, you know, responsibilities from that standpoint. And I think, you know, we're overscheduled right now. Like you talk to anybody that's got young kids and they're maxed out. They, you know, because it's not like you just kick your kids out of the house and go say, run around, go to the park, you know, or the boys club or whatever they did when I was a kid. My parents didn't know where we were, you know, 60% of the day. Now, because of where we've gone with our, I don't think the world's gotten any worse in terms of safety. I think it's just more in your face because there's all these ways of getting bad news that people are fed. So you don't let your kid run around without supervision. You schedule a play date and, you know, they're also involved in, you know, sports and, you know, I talked to anybody who's got a kid in soccer, it's a full-time job to be a soccer parent. You know, so if they're accomplished, they end up, you know, using all the weekend time. So I think there's that aspect, but I feel like hopefully, you know, we live through our example and hopefully people see what we're doing and get motivated by it and have an experience like participating in a situation like the relief at the Y and have a positive experience and know, you know, they got more out of it than they gave. And that will influence them, you know, down the road.
I agree. You know, you mentioned pickleball and I don't know how popular that is across the country, but I know so many people play pickleball. And I thought you could spend a little time talking about that and tell people what pickleball is. It's not a pickle. what pickleball actually is.
Well, I would be surprised if there's people listening to us that don't know what pickleball is, but I'll be quickly. So it's a paddle sport that you play on. It's a smaller court than a tennis court. You can fit four pickleball courts in one tennis court. It's usually played in doubles, and it's similar to ping pong from the standpoint of the style of the game is more about finesse than absolute power. And it's very, very social because it's all played in you know, usually foursomes as opposed to singles. So it's doubles. The Westchester Pickleball organization, which I am a part of, is at the Westchester Park and run by an amazing couple people that are very, very community oriented and really strive to make it a great experience for anybody that shows up. And you can go up, they have open play 4 days a week during the week and also on the weekends. And you can show up unannounced. It's $7 for 3 hours of play. There's nets set up. They've got extra paddles and balls. So if you're a newbie, they'll introduce you to the folks that are on the, they split the courts up by skill level, because really as a beginner, you can have great games as long as you're well matched. If you're matched with other beginners, because it's not, it's super easy to play. You can actually have good rallies with people that are just starting as well, but you're just not hitting it hard. Like you're, you know, as you get better and better, you make better shots in the games. So as long as you're matched with people who's your skill level, you can have great, great rallies. And that's what it's all about. No one cares about winning. I mean, we do, we're all competitive, but it's not like if I don't win, I come home in a bad mood. I come home full of joy. Like today, I played for 3 hours this morning.
Wow.
And I had the most amazing time. And so I've got a whole new group of people. I started a group of guys that were on my level playing on the day off that the pickleball organization doesn't organize the courts Tuesdays, or they keep the courts are just wide open. So we have our own nets. So I got a group of guys that we could make up two sets of doubles, and that's already grown to 30 people. And that's just that's just guys. And it's not because we don't want the women to play. There's some amazing women. Just so happens we know the guys we're playing with. Anyway, so I have this whole new group of people that are now showing up to my music events and my soup nights. And, you know, so it's a whole side of the community that now I've got access to, and I've made good friends. And a couple of people I'm recruiting for the board, the Y, came from there. And so, yeah, I can't say enough about it. And it's something that you don't have to be a super athlete to play. You can get out there, and there are people playing that are in their 80s. And one thing you also learn, you can't judge a book by its cover, because there are people you walk on the court, you think, that guy can barely walk. It's going to be a tough game for him. And it turns out, no, they've got skills. So
There's such a sound to pickleball. I walk at Bluff Creek Drive every day, John. And Susie Sivers, I don't know if you, Sivers.
I know Susie.
You know Susie. She plays down there. And I think she also plays in Westchester. There's a sound to pickleball that you know it's pickleball when you hear it, right?
Oh, yeah. Some people hate that sound. It is.
Oh, not me.
For folks that are not playing, it can be annoying. So young homeowners that live around courts, that's one of the main complaints, is it's so damn noisy. And unlike tennis, there's lots of, I'm very vocal. I love to shout good shot and, when I screw up, scream at the stars. But so it's loud and people don't like that. But I feel like it's the sound of people having fun. What's so bad about that,
Absolutely. And, this has been fun, John.
I'm glad. I knew it was going to be an easy conversation. The hard part's fitting it into an hour.
seriously, because, we could just sit down and have something. What am I having for dinner tonight? Are you inviting me? Never mind. I'm approaching an anniversary this week that my chef left 16 years ago this coming Wednesday. I'm sad to say. So everything that I eat goes in the microwave now. But I just want to thank you so much, John, for sharing your stories about why you do what you do, why you enjoy this community that we both share. The YMCA is very lucky to have you on the board. And I just want to thank you so much for sharing this hour with me. It's just been phenomenal.
Well, I've had a great time. I hope that there's somebody out there that wants to hear it. And as I said, I love talking about my community and the things that bring me joy. And this has been a wonderful example.
Well,
so thanks for inviting me.
I get a great deal of satisfaction and purpose doing these podcasts every week. And truly, not most of my guests, I don't know as well as I know you. I have people that are all over the country that join me. But to be able to share this time with you was very meaningful and special for me. So thank you so very much for spending this hour with me, John. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure. You take care.
You do the same. Bye now for everybody. Thanks for listening.